Hello,
and welcome to AdLib, the York Theatre Royal podcast.
This is a special series of episodes live from the Edinburgh Fringe.
Well, I mean, we're live.
You're listening to this once we've got around to editing it all. In this episode, I'm joined by writer and performer Nicola Wren after seeing her show Superstar the day before. Now, Nicola's piece Superstar deals with what it's like to be overshadowed or trying to impress your siblings. Now, thankfully, I've never had that issue. My brother's only going to get a law degree and get a well-paid job whilst I try and get a job in the arts. Anyway, we had a lovely chat in Brooks Bar at Pleasantstone, and I hope you enjoy it as well. And now I'm joined by Nicola Wren, writer and performer of Superstar. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, would you like to just tell us a bit about yourself before we kind of kick off?
Yes, I am Nicola Wren, and I'm a writer from Devon originally, but I live in London now. And this is my third show at the Edinburgh Fringe. I came here for the first time in 2015. And I've originally trained as an actress, but then I got into writing when I graduated from drama school. What else would you like to know about me? My favourite colour is green.
That's very interesting, thank you. You brought Superstar this year. Would you like to, for people that haven't seen it, what is the show about?
The show is about my relationship with my siblings and acting. And it is about my journey to getting to the point where I no longer want to try to impress my siblings all the time by dressing up as characters and performing and trying to be something that I'm not. And it's really about embracing me just being enough as I am rather than needing to hide behind things. About how they have this kind of presence in my life that sometimes stops me from being able to be myself.
So how did it feel? So what are the other two plays you brought to the Fringe?
In 2015 I bought a play called 501 Things I Do in My Bedroom.
Yeah.
And that was my first thing that I'd ever written. And it sounds really raunchy, but actually it was very tame.
Yeah.
I play it safe with the theatre. And it was about a young woman who was struggling to find her place in the world, basically. And then Replay in 2017 was about a police officer whose brother had died very young, and she had kind of repressed all her grief, and things started to happen where it all had to come out in order for her to move on with her career.
So this is the first show you've really kind of written about yourself?
Yes.
Like, deliberately written about yourself?
Yeah,
What did that feel like?
It was actually a big relief, because I've wanted to do it for ages, and I always wondered what would happen if I was myself on stage, and I was always a bit scared because as the show talks about, one of my brothers is very famous.
Yes.
And so I always thought, like, well, I can't be myself, because that would mean I'd have to tell people about that, and so, yeah, I won't do it. But then my desperation for wanting to do it got bigger than my fear of what people would think if I talked about my brother Chris, and so just doing it is such a relief, and it feels more vulnerable but also easier to defend as well, because it's like, well, if you don't like it, I'm sorry, that's just my life.
Yeah.
So there's not much I can do to really change
it. Is it weird being yourself, or at least a version of yourself, on stage as well?
I find it just really fun, because what I really wanted from the show was to be able to kind of invite people into my personality.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit pretentious, but you know, I wanted to be able to give people just a really fun time and see if I could do that as my personality and my sense of humour. And so when that's working, it feels amazing. When it's not working, it feels awful.
Because you can take it quite personally, is it?
A little bit. Especially if you've like read a review or something and then people aren't laughing at bits. You're just like, oh, maybe this is insufferably dull. But when it works, it's really, really good. Like yesterday when you came, actually, it was really fun.
It was a very good audience, very receptive.
Lovely audience.
And so for part of the show, you invite members of the audience to be your siblings. Is that how the different people respond to kind of being given these characters?
Well, they're always so nice. There was only one time where one of them left halfway through, but that was because we had a technical difficulty, I think, and we had to just delay that the show had gone up late. So I'm hoping that he left because of that and not because I had offended him in some way. But I managed to sort of play it off as like that's the typical thing that that brother he was playing would have done is just walk up and leave, walk out and leave. But people are like, yesterday the woman who was playing my brother Chris was really acting.
Really?
And then the other day also there was a little boy who played. We've had two little boys play my brother Chris. Because if I say to people, like, oh, can someone please sit here?
Yeah.
The kids are like, yes, I want to. And so because I allocate that seat first. And that's really fun and interesting doing it to a kid. Because I talk them directly to them, you know. But yeah, it's a bit actually off-putting when they really get into it, because it makes it quite hard.
It definitely makes the performance feel even more personal. That you're kind of you're talking to the audience as a whole, but you are talking to individual people as well. I think that really kind of helps an audience connect with your story as well. So that's very nice.
Oh, thank you.
So what was the process from sort of idea to where we are now? Is that?
So. about a year ago I was just writing notes about little funny ideas I had of things I would just love to do on stage and stories I'd love to tell, and I actually had written like a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air rap about my dad selling caravans and then me being conceived, and I just started like writing these little things down, and then I in November I decided I was just going to do a night of either, you know, it's kind of scratch night where I just do little bits and bobs, or maybe something more full. So I booked a night at the Etc. Theatre in Camden, which is the Bubble Pub, for the end of January. And I was just like, okay, cool, I've got a deadline. And so then I started writing and actually ended up writing a kind of whole play.
Yeah.
That was a different structure to what I have now. But with most of the main stories, because the stories that were coming out felt like they'd been trying to get out of me for ages. And so I just wrote and wrote and wrote and did so many drafts, and then worked with an actor friend of mine who directed the first work in progress.
Yeah.
And at that point, then we started talking about... I started thinking, actually, I think I could go to Edinburgh with this. And because it went down well at the previews, then Underbelly had come to see it, and they said they offered us a space. And then I started working with this amazing director called Sadie Spencer, and she's a really good dramaturg as well. And she came in and was like, right, this is great, but we need to restructure so that the whole so the whole thing about my siblings, not to ruin it for anyone who's listening to this, but the idea of my siblings not showing up has to actually be fed into more throughout the play, rather than as it was in the first preview, just something that's mentioned at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
And so it was a process of drafting and drafting and drafting and just getting closer to what is this show really saying? Because there's a lot of things that I'm saying with it, but what is the core message? And it's just,
What do you think that core message is?
For me, it's about, like, accepting that you are enough.
Yeah.
One is enough, just, you know, as you are, which I know is really cheesy and... cliched, but also I think important. I think it's cliched for a reason because a lot of people are struggling with that sort of thing. So for me, it was about saying, like, you don't need to stop trying to impress people and stop worrying about what people think. Of course, it's hugely ironic to make a play about that when then you're like, what do the reviewers think? What do the audience think? And then, you know, of course, I still really care what people think, but trying not to let it affect my sense of self-worth.
Yeah, because when you're so... It's not... Yes, you've written it, yes, you're performing it, but it also is completely about you. So, yeah, I can see why it'd be tricky to kind of balance those two things. So, is the story completely true? Is all these different little nuggets of kind of snippets of stories that we get, are they all real?
Or I mean, there's some artistic license. Some of the timings, you know, I didn't actually play a Liverpudlian dwarf. I played, it wasn't a dwarf in Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, it was a Liverpudlian character in another pantomime. Okay. Things like that, you know what I mean? And, like, my brother's music didn't play at the life drawing class but the whole story about my boyfriend of the time's ex-girlfriend being there and me doing that ridiculous pose is true. And then basically what I did was all the experiences in there are honest,
yeah,
in that like I have been in really awkward situations when suddenly Coldplay will start playing and it's just like, why is this happening now? Yeah. And have been at parties where people have gone like, oh, I know what would be cool, let's play Coldplay and see how Nicola reacts and things like that.
Yeah.
And the only main thing that I changed was my first job was actually something different than what I say it is in the play, because I didn't want to talk about it in the play because it was a very important job and it was very moving and sad, and I didn't think it'd be okay to joke about it.
That's fair.
But all of the feelings and all of the things that my siblings have said to me and my general life experiences are all true. Yeah.
One of the things, so it's obviously a play full of comedy, but there are a few moments where an audience reacts like, just, so a good example of that is when you went to your agent and they said you need to lose a couple of kilos.
Some people gasped yesterday. Yeah. That's really funny.
Is that something you've faced before, like regularly, or
what, being told to lose weight? Just from her. I'm not with that agent anymore, fortunately. Although she was great in so many ways, but it was just when things were tough, and then I would go to her and sort of try to work out what I could do to get better, you know, to be better at auditions, and she told me to drop some weight, and it was just like, at the time I kind of took it on board as like, oh shit, okay, sorry to swear, I need to do that. But I'm very reluctant to do that because I had a lot of friends who had eat problems with their weight, and I just didn't want to go down that kind of path.
Unfortunately, it's a thing that is part of the industry that's people are trying to shift away from. Like, again, I've seen shows at the Fringe this year about body image and things like that, so it's becoming more, people are talking about it more, but it's not a very nice part. But it's a nice contrast in your show because we're going along with humour, and then occasionally we have moments like that, and it's like, oh, okay, this is real, which is, again, makes it more believable.
I try not to, I didn't put any, like, one of the main criticisms of the show is that and it's been well received and not well received by the critics, but like, One of the criticisms is that it's not, I haven't had enough setbacks in my life and that things haven't been hard enough for me. And I just think, well, I'm not really making a show to bitch and moan about everything that I've found really hard, because I'm also really aware of my privilege.
Yeah.
So if I got made a show where it was like, it's so hard for me, then people would be like, shut up.
You don't want to lie as well. You don't want to pretend.
No. I just wanted to make an hour of good, solid entertainment, and there's just a couple of sort of home truths in there about, you know, things that people have said to me or things that I felt that maybe are a bit more serious and not so nice.
So, the Fringe reaction, how have you found sort of audiences reacting to it?
Oh, so different every day. Most days we have a sort of healthy laughing.
Yeah.
Audience, and some days it's really raucous. It's never been quite as raucous as the first day, and that's an unsettling thing, because I'm like, what did I do on that day that was so different? But I think what's been really nice and also just quite interesting is that because we had a lot of press before, a lot of the tickets got booked up quite early on, and the clientele that book tickets early on aren't necessarily my target audience. Yeah. Because, and this isn't to be really ageist, but there are more references in the show for younger people.
Yeah.
And I think the theme of identity is more prevalent for people my kind of age, because we're in this kind of navel-gazing generation. So I do prefer the audiences when there's a lot of young people in, because it becomes a lot more fun. But there have been some where people just kind of sit through it, and I just try to make it as kind of fun and interesting as possible, then come off stage afterwards and think, oh God, why did I do that? But then the next day will always be better.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and definitely the audience were really enjoying it yesterday. Like, you could just feel it. You could just hear the laughter all the time. It was so nice. I suppose one thing that kind of you talk about, so at the very end of the show you talk really directly to the audience and you say, look, this is a play, but this is a real story, and I chose not to invite my siblings and my family to see the show. Like, have you told them about it? How much have you kind of told them? Because obviously, like, you cover things from, like, your conception. You pretend to be a sperm and...
Yeah, so actually, you were there on the day that my dad came for the first time.
Oh, really?
And I was acting out his sperm. but actually, what I was more uncomfortable with that was talking about when my parents separated, even though I only do that really briefly.
Yeah.
I suddenly was doing it, and I was like, ah. Because I don't mind my parents coming, but I did ask my siblings not to come.
Yeah.
And I think now that I've done it a few times, like, they could definitely come, although it's part of the show that they're not invited.
I was going to say, like, you can't... The whole joke for the first 10, 15 minutes is that they're not there.
Yeah. I mean, but if they came, they'd have to sit in the back and not. No one would know who they were.
You could pick them out and then you go, you can pretend
to
be.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe I'll do a private performance at Christmas this year, and so we can all know what I've been saying. Yeah. But, yeah, I... what was your question?
So, how much have you told them about it? Because, like, obviously, I imagine they're quite... Oh, if we're not allowed to come, are you saying...
Yeah, well, I just quite enjoyed playing with that, actually, with them. Especially my two brothers, who were quite mean to me, Rich and Al. But it was kind of like I had a bit of power, being like, oh, I'm writing a show and you can't come and see it. But I read somewhere that people say, write as if your family are dead. And... I had to not invite them in order to be able to write freely. Yeah. And actually, I don't really say anything that bad about anyone. And, like, my brother's wives have all seen it. And
oh, okay.
So there's nothing that would be... There's nothing in there that they haven't actually said. So I've told them
they
that.
They can't complain, then.
And I've told them that, you know, it's not actually about them, it's about me.
Mm.
And I did let my sister read it because she's lovely and... and then I let Chris read it as well when I did the first draft. He hasn't read this iteration of it. He doesn't know that I call one of his albums a stinker.
You do apologise for it later, so.
Well, I take it right back because I love that album. I'll tell them little bits about. That's an interesting thing which I've discovered with this doing something autobiographical. It's like, how much do you tell people that you're writing about them? Even, I mean, with my siblings, I had to tell them, but because I use their names, but I don't give any information really about them.
Mm.
And then with, like, I talk about quite a few ex-boyfriends and change their names and things, but that's an interesting one to negotiate. Yeah. Of like, how do you tell them what you're saying, and do you need to if you've changed the name?
Yeah, because you kind of do. You need that permission, and that kind of, there's a weird boundary there. But
the permission thing is really interesting. I think for me, this play was all about uncensoring myself, because I've always been really like, I can't say that because he'll think this, or I can't think that because she'll think that. And it's like, oh, I just want to write what I'm going to write, and if it's the truth, then I'm allowed to say it. And I'm not. It's not a vicious play, you know.
Another bit in the show that. Is it true that you got your stage name Wren from Pizza Express? Is that...
Yes. I mean, it's a combination of factors.
Yeah.
The inspiration came from the Pizza Express pizza called La Wren. And then, obviously, I thought La Wren, and I was like, oh, well, my grandmother was a wren in the Second World War. And also, actually, it was later on that someone said that a wren is a small bird like a martin. But it initially came from Pizza Express, and I'll never forget that day. Was really excited to write that story, like, and also things like I talk about that I wanted to call myself Winnie Willett for a while, but I was like, no, because when I get my BAFTA, people will write, will she win it, Winnie Willett, and that's mental. And it's like, I just was so having so much fun writing down these really embarrassing things that I've genuinely thought. I didn't know that the Pizza Express thing was going to go so sort of big on the tabloid press, and that I'd forever be sort of haunted by the Lorraine, which I've never even eaten. I really like the pepperoni one. American, for those Pizza Express lovers out there. I did change my name. But it's been interesting, people's response to hearing that I changed my name, because a lot of people are like, oh, but Martin's a really common surname. Like, no one would know that you were Chris's sister. And I hope in the play that it's a bit clearer,
it's
the sort of motivation for changing... I mean, there was also another Nicola Martin knocking around the spotlight, so I had to change it, but I decided to sort of go quite far away
it's,
from
it. It's more symbolic than actually the practicalities of it as well.
Yes, exactly.
That's what you get across.
Thank you, I hope that's what I really hope with the show, but then it doesn't, you know, when I've been on doing interviews and stuff and people are like, God, she's an idiot, like no one would know. Martin's such a common sense, and I was like, well, obviously I didn't think someone was going to look at me and be like, yeah. Oh, but it was, yeah, it's like a symbolic separation and something that I needed to do to kind of help forge my own identity and career.
Yeah. So beyond the Edinburgh Fringe, what's the life of the show? What's the plan?
Good question. York Theatre Royal. No, I don't know. I really want to take it back to London.
Yeah.
Maybe do a little tour. And then this, because this is going to be the last one woman show that I write.
Yeah. Okay.
And maybe until I'm like 60 and I decide to do some kind of
revival. You've
got revival.
A lot of stories. Yeah.
When my, if I have children, if they've all gone off to university, I'll decide that it's time to write another play. God, that sounds all terribly middle class, doesn't it? But I don't know. I don't know. We have to have meetings when I get back to London, and I'd really like to bring it to a London audience, because whenever I've done it in London, previewing it, it goes down really well.
Yeah.
And I just love doing it, so I want to do it for as long as possible. But I don't know.
Yeah, kind of exciting. But we'll wrap it up there, if that's okay with you. But
Yeah, sorry, I do waffle on.
Thank you so much for coming on the show there, and it was a great show, Superstar, so keep an eye out for it in future dates.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode.
If you're a first-time listener, then we've got plenty of other episodes for you to go back to. Please give us a nice review and tell your friends and family where to find us.
See you soon. Bye.